You're listening to the Digital Experience Podcast from 7signal, the leader in wireless experience monitoring. Each episode, we discuss everything from access points to endpoints and the wireless experiences of everything in between. Learn more about us at 7signal.com. That's the number 7, signal.com.
So, again, today's topic is, wouldn't it be nice if all we had to worry about was Wi-Fi? And I'm sure it's going to resonate with a lot of long-timers. And if there's anybody relatively new to Wi-Fi in the group, you know, maybe it'll scare the hell out of you. We'll see where we go with this. Yeah. About me, I'm guessing most of you, many of you know enough about me where you know that I'm dreamy, and we'll just leave it at that. And right to topic. So you say, wouldn't it be nice? In the beginning, you know, things were simple in the beginning, right? We've got the wireless network and we got the client. That basic formula, you know, obviously the wireless exists to get you onto the network and off onto the internet. But things used to be so simple, you know, way back when there was no security. And then that lasted about a minute and a half before the human nature took over and exploits kicked in. And you know, then we had to get into WAP. You know, then that was quickly broken, then 802.1x and all kinds of other security stuff. Then we got into driver issues. We still have driver issues. How many years later? How many decades later? We still have driver issues. You know, the lines have gotten blurred between simple client access and other network functions. And we'll talk about a lot of this. And even things like interoperability testing. It all sounds like it should just jive and line up and work. And unfortunately, it just doesn't. There's more to it. Like I say, it just used to be so simple. Yeah, but then that simple equation became this mess. And some of you have probably seen this before. This kind of came from a blog I wrote called the soon-to-be famous cocktail napkin or something like that. It's on my wirednot.wordpress.com blog. But then, you know, other people have asked if they could adapt this over to training materials and all of that. But yeah, not certainly not going through all of it. Just let your eyes wander over it. And you know, we talk about wireless, and wireless is just the tip of the spear and the network spear. And there's just so much beyond and behind the antennas on the APs that, you know, manifest their functionality or dysfunctionality to those using the network. So, you know, it has just gotten so complicated and so complex. And then there's always the Wi-Fi Alliance and their, you know, impact on the industry. You know, if you're certified interoperable, it ought to be the end of the story. The problem with that is that there are major client makers who don't care to become certified. You know, thankfully they generally work. And then there are others that are certified that don't work so well on certain networks doing certain functions. So it's just nothing is straightforward. This, you know, even after, like I said, you know, we're two decades into it now, and still nothing is as smooth as it should be. Wi-Fi absolutely did not follow the straightforwardness, if you will, of like Ethernet. So 802.11 and 802.3 are just two different beasts as far as, you know, variability, interoperability, reliability. That's not saying good, bad, or indifferent, or anybody did anything wrong. It's just it's a whole different animal, and you know, that brings complexity. And I will just apologize right away for the distracting little slide numbers. For some reason, I don't see them when I'm building the slides, and then they show up afterwards. So I apologize for my weak PowerPoint skills and seeing those distracting numbers. So so what? Networking has gotten complicated, right? I'm not telling you anything you probably don't know. But at the same time, it's easy to say it generically. Things have gotten complicated. But then when you kind of drill into that, it does get a little profound in spots. But basically, we're juggling, you know, there's more balls in the air than what I'm showing you. We're absolutely juggling the wireless network itself, you know, radius. Radius isn't even radius anymore. Now radius is NAC. And if all you use out of your NAC system is radius, then you're not doing what the vendors want you to do. They want you to be turning all of the knobs and buying all of the licenses and doing all of this stuff with these super systems in the background. And then, you know, wireless just sits on top of the LAN. So you've got, you know, the Ethernet side of things to worry about, PoE and port speeds, especially as we get into the newer APs and the, you know, are you running your Wi-Fi 6 APs on 1 gig ports? And that spawns all kinds of religious debates. Client crap, there's no easy way, there's no gentle way or polite way to talk about what goes on with the client. So, you know, client crap, drivers, eyeball requirements, you know, user ignorance, right? I'm guessing some of you feel just like this guy juggling these balls day to day. Now, assuming your job is anything like mine, you know, this is some of the stuff beyond just simple Wi-Fi, or some of the stuff that in your mind equals Wi-Fi, however you phrase it, that you're responsible for. Again, certainly, you know, this is my day-to-day. Not only do you have to keep the wireless network healthy, you need to be evolving it. Things change quick. We're on our, you know, fifth, sixth, you know, depending on where your mind is, we're somewhere between our fifth and sixth generation of wireless, you know, as defined by the standards. When do you evolve it? You know, when do you just hold your cards that you have and wait it out for the next thing? When do you make your move? You know, you got to stay on top of the standards. What's optional? What's required? You know, how does it fit within your network? Client trends? You know, there's all of that on the surface, all of the, you know, reading and research and decision making. But then under the hood, through the years, my absolute biggest wireless problem, if somebody were to ask me, you know, what's the most common problem you see in wireless? To me, it's been, other than the clients and the disparity in the clients, it's absolutely been code bugs out of the various vendors. You know, a lot of times what you have is the problem when it comes to controllers and your management system and the firmware and the APs, and you know, just kind of has become a way of life. But that's not even really a wireless problem. It's the underpinnings of the wireless. And like I say, for me, it's a long running fact of life. And I would say it's a frustration, but it's even gone past that. It's kind of just, it is what it is, and it's surprising that it is what it is, but it really is that bad from certain vendors. Then again, if you're in a big network, and I run big networks, I run small networks, but the whole radius and NAC thing, if you're lucky, all of that is on somebody else's shoulders. For me, I have to run the wireless network, and I also have to run the radius environment. You know, and then depending on where you are, these affiliate frameworks, you know, AnyRealm, EduRealm, GovRealm, if you're familiar with any of those. So not only are you responsible for keeping up your own authentication network, you're also on the hook to integrate them with outside authentication frameworks. They're really cool when they work, and thankfully they work generally pretty well. But when they fail, it can be hard to find the right support. If you're reaching out to somebody else to figure out what's going on in their environment that's impacting yours. So just another spoke in the wheel of complexity. You know, guest access solution. In the religious debates that go on about whether you should even have one, and should you have a portal, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, everybody's allowed to define their own policy, implement according to their policy. But even that, you know, how do you decide what's right for a given environment? When it comes to guest access, You know, solutions and force policy. Well, who's going to decide on policy? If you're running the network, you probably should be at least consulting. If you're the wireless expert, ideally you wouldn't just be a spectator to the generation of policy. You'd actually be in on it and talking with people who need your input on how the wireless is used and what's actually possible, and you know, how do you translate organizational goals into a solution for things like guest access? So, you know, we're far afield from just maintaining wireless as we work through these bullets, right? Just maintaining the wireless network itself. We're, you know, we're absolutely far afield from that. And then when we get back to it, you know, client troubleshooting, which means network troubleshooting, which means services troubleshooting, which means internet troubleshooting, DNS troubleshooting, on and on, right? It's a tapestry of complexity that goes far beyond just the client connecting to the AP. So, you know, let's kind of come back to that. What I'm saying, it used to be so simple. And we've proven that it's not. So when it does fail, right, when we have a breakdown or a perceived breakdown between the client and the AP or the client and the bigger wireless network, you know, my typical wireless network, you know, I'll have a building with 100 plus APs. And that building is part of a bigger wireless network that has thousands of APs. Or I also have remote sites that have between 1 and 35 APs. But regardless of the size and the scope, and you do have to adjust your thinking for all of those, somewhat. But one thing that is common, you know, you get a reported failure, and this is where I challenge you. What's your way of reacting? You dart out the door. Just, you know, run out, grab your laptop, grab your handheld tool of choice, and you go out to find what's wrong with the network. Or do you maybe slow down and gather just a bit of data? Right? Do you tend to remember the OSI model? You know, physical layer, working your way up, because you kind of need to make sure that everything is good all the way up before the applications can work. And sometimes the application is the only thing that's failing, but you're looking for problems down below because you didn't slow down to gather, you know, enough intel to kind of make a nuanced approach to the problem. You know, do you find out if the problem is a single client, single SSID, one room in a building, the entire building? Suddenly something's going on with one model of client, one model of APs. Different APs can act different, especially after they've had their firmware upgraded, or if they're running different versions of firmware. You know, do you stop and think, what kind of client am I dealing with? Is this a laptop? Is this a time clock? Is this a wireless lock? Is this a digital sign? You know, what exactly am I dealing with? And then on top of that, you know, do you know where to look before you just run out the door? And, you know, my graphic there, if you're not doing any of this stuff, you're kind of doing what I consider kind of knee-jerk reaction. And given the complexity that's beyond just the wireless, the knee-jerk stuff just so works against you. You got to slow it down. And we're all fixers. We're all helpers. We want to just go out and find the problem. But if the assumption is that the problem is in the network, which is really the smallest part of the equation anymore, in the wireless network, which is really the, you know, in many cases, the smallest part of the equation, you just might be barking up the wrong tree and taking longer to find the problem. You know, it's gotten really complex, so complex with all the systems and all the different building blocks that I mentioned before. I'm saying, hopefully you've positioned that complexity to your advantage. You know, when you put in all of these systems, hopefully you recognize that these systems have stories to tell, and you need to be able to know, you know, what to ask of them. You know, a lot of vendors want to sell you the single glass of pain that I like, you know, and pain of glass. I like to call it a glass of pain because it really usually can be a disappointment, an overpriced disappointment. And when that single glass of pain comes up short, hopefully you've got a cool head, because that's going to beat the knee-jerk reaction 100% of the time. I'm a huge fan of Syslog. You're going to find out that all the logs generated by all the different boxes, you know, they really, really tell you a lot without ever going out into the field. Problem comes in, you take 10, 15 minutes, you know where to look for things. Without going to the environment, you may have the problem solved in minutes. You know, I'm telling you from experience that absolutely does work that way if you're set up right and you know what to look at. When it gets into correlating all of the logs from the endless boxes, NTP is your friend. Nothing is more frustrating than assuming that everybody is synced to the same clock source. And then when you start looking through logs, you find things aren't lining up. You know, Radius says that this failed client tried to authenticate at 10 a.m. this morning, but the controller says that it failed at 2 a.m. yesterday afternoon or yesterday morning. It's like, well, something isn't right there. So having everything synced is a absolute best practice I would recommend. When I say that Google is your friend, you know, sometimes, and you know, I've had to do this a couple of times recently, a single user out of thousands of clients is having problems. Okay, give me a good description of your problem. What adapter and what driver are you on? Off I go to Google. What am I trying to find? Other precedent, other people that have had the same problem in, you know, similar situations. So we got some Intel adapter with a certain driver version on an 802.1x network. Nothing in my system points to any of my stuff. So I'm looking for other people that are having problems, and usually you can find it. You find out what driver version actually fixes the problem in that situation. Otherwise, you might have to look up, again, the notion that Google is your friend. You might have to look up device capabilities. Sometimes you actually have to go to FCC testing because client documentation is so bad. You have to see what the FCC said the device is capable of before you can even get a sense of, okay, this thing only works in Uni One. It can't do any other channels. That's why it's failing in this other environment, and nothing in the device documentation tells you that. Again, good old using the internet. What are the capabilities of the device? You know, maybe using Google will unveil some quirky requirements. There's some kind of oddball casting functionality that's needed for this device that nobody knew about till they put it on the network. Or maybe, you know, you have to Google just how to get a hold of the device vendor, because you might have to contact their developers and their engineering people to get a sense of what's going on with a problem device. So again, you know, Google is your friend for a number of reasons, on top of your own logs and looking at all the various boxes that have anything to do with the overall story. Synthetic testing. You know, if you can figure out how to implement it right in your environment, wonderful, wonderful tool to leverage. Somebody says, oh, it's not working in this building. This one particular SSID, whatever, isn't working. If you've got a synthetic client in that building or in that environment, nice to be able to pull it up, invoke it remotely and say, well, you know, my test device is working. Let's take a look at what's going on with the client, versus looking at what's wrong with the network. If you can cultivate, you know, what I call friends, whether they be coworkers or, you know, just somebody you know that's out in the field as a wireless user that you can talk to, you know, somebody, person A reports the problem. If you have access to person B or C who can corroborate it over the phone or through email or whatever, that goes a long way to help you. Yeah. Packet capture options, we're getting spoiled now with a lot of systems. They have built-in packet capture. I find that to be wonderful, the systems that allow you to do that. So empowering to to not have to go through complicated, to not have to go through complicated packet capture setups and, you know, roll a vehicle to get there and have to rely on the one or two people that, you know, remotely know how to do effective wireless packet capture. But if you don't know what your options are, if you haven't exercised them, you know, the various new ones that are built into the system, kind of ripping yourself off. Anymore, NAT is a fact of life, in especially in big environments. And when I say NAT, I don't just mean like a Linksys box and simple NAT. I'm talking about like the likes of A10 is one example of a big NAT vendor. Big network appliances that you set up in clusters to do NAT for thousands of clients. Sometimes NAT is the problem. But so if you're using this sort of resource, you need to know how to be able to use those logs. And then, you know, the API, and this is what I'm struggling with right now. I'm just not a programmer kind of guy. More and more systems have APIs. Sometimes less functionality is being built into the GUI because the vendor wants you to rely on the API. And if you're a dinosaur like me, that may not come so easy, but you really need to be able to use the API before it's a before it becomes a necessity. The whole trial by fire thing. If you don't know what you're doing with APIs, it can just frustrate you. So I'm trying to learn some of our newer APIs recreationally before a crisis comes up that requires me to go down that road. So, you know, complexity, right? And you have to recognize the complexity for your environment or environments, pick it apart and become comfortable with it. And once you do, it's like, okay, I've got a whole toolbox full of tools. I just have to get used to them. And once you get over that hurdle, it's very empowering. So, you know, back to the simple equation, right? We got a client, the client's talking to the wireless network. My Wi-Fi broke. Well, I'm guessing it didn't. Is the network administrator, is the guy who built it, the guy who watches it day in and day out, I'm guessing the Wi-Fi didn't break. And why do I say that it didn't break? Well, my single pane of glass, my single glass of pane, tells me that everything's good. My APs are up. They got long uptimes. You know, the obvious is good. I've got, you know, 100 successful clients. You happen to be one that isn't working. I can tell that Wi-Fi did not break. That's not to say that you don't have a problem that I'm going to solve or try to solve. It just means that the Wi-Fi did not break, and I can tell you that with great confidence. At the same time, you got to know where to go pick apart the user's problem. Is it an application problem? Well, if they said every time I go to use Zoom, it sucks, so your Wi-Fi is broke. Well, I can go to the Zoom dashboard and I can find out if Zoom has any problems. And occasionally you'll find in the, this is right from Zoom, you can go query the application, you know, service provider and see what they say is going on. That kind of information is very helpful. Single user problems, sometimes on the secure networks, very often are 802.1x, right? Depending on what peep or EAP type you're using, PEEP versus TLS, whatever, the failures are going to be for different reasons, but you need to have the capability to drill into the logs and even be aware of how your 802.1x is set up. If you didn't set it up, you still need to know how it understand or need to understand how it works so that you can troubleshoot it in the course of troubleshooting the wireless network. Some other things that you might need to deal with. So the upper graphic, basically, you know, back to my trivia question, this user couldn't get a DHCP address. Feels like the wireless is broke. They couldn't get a DHCP address. Something's going on in the DHCP system. Next one down, user authentication against Active Directory failed. This is a password problem. But depending on what the client sees or wants to see, and when I say the client in this case, I mean the human client, depending on how they're interacting with their client device, they may not either see that they're putting in bad credentials or they're misinterpreting it. Doesn't matter. To them, the network broke. Something sucks. Working their way down. Here we've got a Eduroam problem, and then this particular user, somebody's using a different EAP type at one site than they need to be using. So they're basically using PEEP where they should have been using TLS. Again, the user doesn't know that. They just report that it's broken. Here we have packet capture. This was done natively on the third one down here where I'm wiggling the mouse. Packet capture taken natively on the MIST wireless system tells you that you ended up having a breakdown in the authentication process. Very, very handy, but you need to know how to invoke it and then pick it apart and read what it's telling you. At the very bottom here, different systems do, the point here where we're circled on the right, you've got a couple of strongly interfering devices, right? Different systems, whether they call it a neighbor AP, whether they call it a rogue AP, bottom line is you got devices obliterating your RF. Different systems will tell you the presence of those problems. And then some will let you drill in and actually see connected clients that are on what I consider them all rogues and let you go after them. Others just say, yep, you got interference here from this device and we're not going to show you who's connected to it, but you do have a problem if you choose to go out and find the problem. So you get some variability there. But just knowing that 14 APs are being impacted by this thing at this signal strength on channel 6, there's value there. And you only get that value if you know where to look. Here we have a 7 signal screenshot. We're still in unlicensed spectrum, right? Even though we talk about Wi-Fi, the one thing that is easy to lose sight of, Wi-Fi happens in unlicensed spectrum. It happens in the ISM band, it happens in the uni bands. It's all unlicensed. We are absolutely at the mercy of all the other devices that are in those frequency bands. And there's a lot of them, and the variety is endless, and it can be absolutely weird, and there's nothing we can do about it except find it and try to work around it and maybe mitigate it. But when we say mitigate, you're talking about having a very hopefully cordial discussion with somebody who has as much right to be there as we are because it's all unlicensed. But regardless of how quote unquote mitigation turns out, you need to be able to at least expose the problem and then figure out what you can do about it. But if you can't expose it, the users just are going to continue to be miserable and complain about the Wi-Fi being broke. And maybe in this case, you can stretch it and say, this did break the Wi-Fi. But if you were to remove it, you'd find the Wi-Fi is just fine. So is the Wi-Fi broke or are we being jammed? Or does one equal the other? I guess that part of it is all semantics. So I'm telling you, Wi-Fi is what Wi-Fi does, as I say at the top of the slide, especially to the end user. If it feels broken, doesn't matter that it's not. To the user, it's broken. And it's not really a healthy discussion if that's where the discussion ends. Hey, Wi-Fi is broke. No, it's not. You got a different problem. You're going to have to advance the discussion past that. There's going to have to be some nuance and some gaining of trust so that they work with you to figure out what the exact problem is beyond just, Wi-Fi broke. Wi-Fi is the last link of the network chain. Usually, at least in my experience, the other links are broke, but Wi-Fi gets blamed. That's just the nature of our work. It's the nature of our trade. It's the nature of the technology. If you're confident in your wireless design, you're confident in your firmware, and the way you built it, your resiliency and your redundancy, the best tool to have, one of the best tools. Trouble gets reported. Take a deep breath. Go to that 10,000 foot view and look at everything. Consider everything. Is this a single user problem? Is this something that's common to a whole bunch of stuff? You know, what's happening here? What's happening there? Okay, everything looks good or everything looks bad, depending on the situation. But you got to kind of get above it all and start picking apart things that will help you categorize where the exact problem is. Even if it's just for a single end user, other users can be slow to report. Sometimes a single user problem is actually a more extensive problem that just hasn't been reported yet. Sometimes, depending on the generation and the environment, the end user might tweet, OMG, the network here sucks. And in their mind, they just opened a help desk ticket. I mean, that's the world we're living in. So you got to kind of take a quick look at everything and really get a sense of what's going on. You know, as I keep stressing, you have to know the other building blocks in the overall system. And you know how to get the important, have to know how to get the important data from those building blocks. Every network environment is its own ecosystem. And it's up to us to know the building blocks and know the data that the building blocks in that ecosystem can give us. That's on us. Things are often not as they first seem, right? And I'm saying, you know, this is my charge. You put in a good Wi-Fi system. So why are we so quick to assume every time there's a problem that wireless is broke? And I see that with a lot of my colleagues. Oh, we got a problem. The Wi-Fi must be broke. I'm kind of more of the mindset, we got a trouble ticket. Let's get past the hysteria. Let's find the actual problem. It's probably not wireless, especially if it's a single user problem. But it's so easy to say, oh my God, wireless just failed. We failed somebody. We have to fix the Wi-Fi. I find the lack of confidence kind of disturbing sometimes. It tells me that you don't really maybe believe in what you put out, or, well, that opens up a whole can of worms. Why don't you have confidence in what you put out? Whole different discussion. But the bottom line is things are generally not as they seem. You know, the vast majority, in my opinion, my experience on a good Wi-Fi network, the vast majority of Wi-Fi problems are not Wi-Fi. We kind of come back to this, right? And I'll just, you know, again, don't want to read through it all, bottom to top, top to bottom, whatever. But there's so much involved that can make Wi-Fi feel bad. And when we talk about Wi-Fi problems, we're basically, Wi-Fi itself is actually, you know, just between the AP and the client. Tip of the spear, tip of the iceberg, whatever you want to call it, last link in the chain. But if everything else isn't lining up, it's going to feel broke out there. But feeling broke out there does not equal being broke out there. And that's the part that we have to discipline ourselves to look past. You know, I don't have a knob to fix Bob's broken Wi-Fi when Bob is the only only person having problems. I have to find out what's going on for Bob in the back-end ecosystem. Just kind of the way it is. And it would be nice if all we had to worry about was Bob and his machine and the AP, but there's just so much more to it than that. And with that, hopefully we've left a little bit of time to talk. How are we looking, Chris?
I think we got a couple minutes here, and I just want to say I really appreciate your approach of cooler heads will prevail, because when you get into that troubleshooting method and you get so excited to try to fix a problem, if you don't fully understand what the issue is, you can actually compound the problem by making changes to things that aren't actually the issue. So you can really, you know, cause a bigger issue than maybe a single user, and then you end up impacting the entire environment. So I like that approach a lot. It's one that I take quite often.
Yeah, I would fully agree. And it's just so easy to say, I better change something here. I better change a channel. I better change power. I better change some timer. And maybe that's going to be the solution. But if that's what you rush right into, as you said, you're putting into effect the butterfly effect, and you're causing problems way down the line that are going to be harder to figure out. Just, you know, you got to take a deep breath and be the professional when it comes time to react.
Absolutely. And if you spend the time designing it, as you said, and implementing it correctly, then, you know, taking the additional time to understand it rather than trying to adjust it, it makes life a lot easier. So Heather, I don't know if we have any questions in the panel yet here. I'm taking a look.
We have one that just came through from anonymous attendee. And they're asking, could you please briefly talk about NAC as a beginner with Wi-Fi, have familiarity with basic radius protocol?
Can you, NAC?
Talk about NAC, yeah.
Yeah, so network access control. You know, radius is basically, you know, the equation of radius, right? You've got the supplicant, which is the client. You've got the authenticator, which is either going to be the access point or the controller. And then you've got the whatever is being authenticated against, the radius server, which may be populated with your users or certificates, or it might tie to an Active Directory backend. That's the basic equation of radius, for lack of a better term. That's the basic radius framework. But NAC wants to do all kinds of things. I'm going to fingerprint you. I've identified you as a, you know, device X in the hands of user Y. And when I see that combination, then I assign you this set of permissions, and you're only allowed to go to this VLAN or stuff like that. That's the difference between NAC and radius. Radius is basic authentication. NAC can be just this laundry list of different controls, role-based kind of stuff. And you know, one example of a problem that you can see there is I evaluated one of the market leading NAC solutions, and it couldn't fingerprint anything right. I mean, I plug in a Xbox or, you know, have an Xbox connect to the network, and it sees the Xbox as a Chromebook, and hit the wireless network with a Roku, and it sees it as an iPhone. And the answer from the vendor is, oh, just open up a support ticket and we'll fix the fingerprint. Like, I don't know. We didn't end up using those services because to me it was just needless complexity, and we chose another way to solve what we were trying to do. But hopefully that answers the question, you know, difference between NAC and radius.
Right. The next one is more wireless related. This could almost be probably a topic on its own, but it's Andrew's asking, I've heard many wireless experts say to disable low data rates on radios. What about the mix of 5 gig laptops and scan guns? Do you leave those on? I'm referring to a warehouse environment. So I know, Lee, this isn't in your wheelhouse, but what are your thoughts on something like that? I mean, you live in a mixed environment, right? So you have tons of stuff you support. What do you think about data rates in that environment?
We have a complement of people doing retail operations. We do have scan guns and all that. But for the last 8 years, 10 years, we've disabled 802.11b data rates. And, you know, part of our answer is if you have something that doesn't work, replace it, because there are scan guns that can do the newer, at least data rates, if that's all we're talking about. Kind of no reason. Now, granted, I'm talking about a handful of devices. If you're in some environment where you've got thousands of these things, if that's even realistic, maybe that's harder to just say, you know, replace them. We have our minimum blah, blah, blah. You need to replace all your junk. But for us, it was easy enough to say, you know, this is our line in the sand. Your devices have to at least be 802.11g, because we disable all of the 802.11b stuff. And that did include a few retail scanners that had to get replaced.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is quite what the asker of the question was trying to get at, but
I think pretty close. And I also think, you know, you're right on the right path. You know, it comes down to policy. You know, what is your network policy? And are you in that conversation to be able to drive that? So if that's, you know, is that a design fix that you're trying to put in place, or are you trying to upgrade the old gear? Maybe you have thousands of those and you have to, you know, support them. I think it's an internal discussion that has to be had at the company to, you know, what's the policy going to be? Do you want to support those lower data rates or not? And is it millions of dollars to replace the devices instead? So I think it's kind of a two-parter there.
Yep, I would agree.
Hey, I don't see any other ones. Heather, do you want to summon Eric?
Oh, maybe. I wonder why you can't see him. I certainly can. Oh. I see a couple left in here. Well, maybe just one from Andrew. Do you see that one?
No, we just about the radios, the data rates. It's the only one I see. Yeah, we just talked about that one.
Sorry. Perfect. Okay, great. Oh, Nick at the midnight hour. Do you see that one that just came in?
I do. Let me take a quick read here. Okay, so this is kind of that same sort of thing here. So it's saying we recently transitioned to a 5 GHz only deployment at a particular site, which solved the performance issues. Now, getting rid of 2.4 makes sense. However, two visitors were unable to connect to the guest network because their Samsung phones were 2 gig only or 2.4 gig only. Any thoughts on how you approach the situation?
I can tell you my own thought. It goes back to the, you know, philosophically, do we owe everybody accommodation? Or our network is our network. If you can connect, great. You know, are you truly guests that are just passing through? If you are, you know, use your freaking data plan for today. Big deal. And I don't mean to sound callous. It's just like, if you're a guest and you can't use our environment, are we obligated to alter it to accommodate you? Is it 2 Samsung phones out of 10,000, which is statistical zero? I mean, and how important are these guests? Is it the CIO of Ford Motor Company? I'm guessing he's not carrying a 2.4 gig Samsung phone. I mean, there's just so much to this, but, you know, for me, the bottom line is, you know, sorry, this is the environment.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down once again, back to policy. You know, what's your policy for your company? Are you, you know, do you support everyone? Is 2.4 the reason, you know, you got rid of 2.4 for a reason because it wasn't performing well. You have a 5 GHz design. You know, if that's carried throughout the corporation, then, you know, then it might be acceptable to have those two phones, or, you know, by volume, it could be the same thing. So hopefully, Nick, that kind of answers a little bit.
Yeah. And I don't mean to be cold when I say use your data plan, but that is an interesting fact of life, is we are all carrying our own network with us these days. You know, if you're just looking to get to the internet and you don't need something specific in that guest environment, you know, spend a few megabits and use your data plan.
For sure.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of the Digital Experience Podcast. To hear future episodes, be sure to subscribe and don't forget to rate the podcast. Learn more about us at 7signal.com. That's the number 7signal.com.